are in the Kuzari on page 125. I hope that's where we are. Just to let you know, they just republished the compact edition in one volume, so it's like a new edition. So if anyone needs a copy, I have a few extra in my house. I just got a shipment from New York. So if anyone needs a copy, you can send me an email, and I can set one aside for you. But I guess they'll be arriving in the stores soon as well. Okay, so let's just get our bearings as to where we are, because it has been some time. We were talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan for creation. And part of that plan for creation was to create a system of hierarchy where there are more complex creatures and more simple creatures in the world. And that includes humankind as well, that there are multiple levels of complexity or sophistication within humanity, so that you can have one nation that is different and more spiritually sophisticated than another nation. And therefore the Jewish people have a certain quality that no other nation has. And what quality is that? Remember, those who have been with us for this whole time, what is the unique quality of the Jewish people?
Prophecy.
Prophecy, exactly. And so let's make sure that we understand that it is the prophetic ability that is contained within the Jewish people uniquely, according to Rabbi Yehuda Levi. It's a controversial stance that he takes, and it does have its own problems if there are challenges to this issue, because of course we know that there have been non-Jewish prophets, and that's why the Rambam disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi and says quite explicitly that it is possible for other nations to achieve prophecy. But Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi maintains throughout the Kuzari that which makes the Jewish people unique is our ability for prophecy. He defends it by saying that the whole universe is hierarchical in nature. There are inanimate objects, there are animals, there are leaves, there are growths, there are things that can move, things that can't move. You can't say that a leaf is any worse off than an animal because it can't move. It is what it is, and that's the way Hashem created it. And therefore, we can't challenge God's order of creation. There was a system and a plan for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create the world the way it is, the way we find it. But now we're going to launch into another discussion based upon our discussion of prophecy. And that is that in addition to the ability for a prophet to get a communication directly from Hashem, there is a benefit to all those who come in contact with the prophetic experience, even people who themselves are not prophets. There's the benefit that mankind has to gain by having prophets walk the earth is that prophets provide us with a glimpse of the spiritual utopian reality of what we would call the afterlife. We'll use the term afterlife as a generic term to describe what awaits people after death, because we're not going to get into the specifics of what awaits people after death. But here, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, towards the end of the first essay, is going to launch into a very extensive discussion, which will probably take us a few weeks to properly analyze, a discussion of the absence of the afterlife in the Torah, and how he understands the afterlife, the afterlife's omission being a deliberate act of Hashem, and how the existence of prophecy acts as a perfectly viable substitute for any discussion of the afterlife in the Torah. Now, that may not be readily apparent. How does the existence of prophecy in this world provide us with proof of an afterlife and provide us with a sufficient, not even necessarily a proof, but sort of like a sufficient alternative to a discussion of the heaven and hell. That's not something that's readily visible to us until we actually get into the text. And we'll see why that's such an important topic for Reb Yehuda Halevi and for a number of other Jewish thinkers as well. So let's see, he's going to launch into this topic by talking about people who are not prophets, but who come in contact with prophets when prophets walk the earth. And that's what we're going to see at the very top of page 125. So we need a reader for today. Anyone want to volunteer to be our reader?
You should know that one who comes in contact with a prophet will experience a spiritual renewal when he hears the prophet's divine words. It is then that the individual departs from the normal level of mankind due to the soul's aspiration to reach these angelic levels and its attachment to humility and purity.
So what is he saying? He says that even a person who himself is or herself is not a prophet, but who comes in contact with a prophet, such a person experiences a spiritual renewal when he hears the prophet's divine words. So all you need to hear is a Navi reciting the words of Nevuah, and you're immediately imbued with a sense of divine inspiration, even though that's not prophecy. But the words themselves have a metaphysical effect because your soul resonates with those words. Now, this is true potentially even when you just read the words of prophecy, which is why we have a tradition which is, depending upon what level of the mystical spectrum you subscribe to, the more mystical you are, the more you subscribe to this idea, which is that just reading the words of Tanakh provide you with spiritual nourishment, even if you don't necessarily understand the words. So therefore the Ramchal and a number of other mystics tell us that that's the benefit to, let's say, reading Tehillim. And we know that this is something that people engage in all the time, is that they'll have a Tehillim recitation group, or saying a few kapitalach of Tehillim after davening for someone who's ill. And we believe that this has some kind of metaphysical benefit. It nourishes us, or it nourishes the person on whose behalf we are praying. And it provides some kind of benefit. So what he's saying is that when you hear divine words, you're filled with some kind of spiritual uplift. The individual departs from the normal level of mankind due to the soul's aspiration to reach these angelic levels and its attachment to humility and purity. Your neshama sort of gravitates and jumps out towards those words that you hear and wants to reach a higher level. Do we all subscribe to that? Do we all subscribe to the idea that reading words of Tanakh that are recited through prophecy provide something inspiring and nourishing for the neshama? So again, you know, it depends. There are some who would believe that it has to be something that you understand. If you don't understand the words, then you don't get anything out of it. And there are others who say that no, even without understanding it, you connect on some level. I don't know what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi believes. That's too difficult for me to. It's too vague from this paragraph to be able to decipher whether he believes that there's a metaphysical benefit. But it seems like he's suggesting that it requires you hearing the words, and at least probably understanding them as well, that the words themselves, because of their divine nature, inspire a person to want to reach the next level. And there are some times when you hear inspiring words and you know, I'm not at that level, but I'm inspired to try and aspire to that level. Okay. So let us continue. So that's one benefit of coming in contact with a prophet, or at least the words of a prophet. Now let's take a look at the next benefit.
Contact with a prophet also serves as demonstrable proof of rewards of the world to come. For the aspiration of this higher type of human is that the soul return to its source, separate from its physical senses, and be able to envision the elevated spiritual realm, and the wealth and benefits of seeing and hearing this realm's angelic light and divine speech. This superior individual is therefore unafraid of what comes after death, for this type of soul is assured of being spared from death, and will live eternally, once its physical vestiges have passed away.
Okay, let's hold it right there. Contact with the prophet also serves as demonstrable proof of the rewards of the world to come. How so? Who can tell me how contact with a prophet, or at least someone who experiences prophecy, knows that there is a Olam Haba? And he says, by extension, anytime you come in contact with a prophet, you also are given the same lesson as well. What is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's argument, please?
Maybe he's saying that just the fact that somebody can receive prophecy tells you there is a God, he is in contact with humankind, he has expectations for us, he's given us the Torah, things that he says will come true. There are so many things you could see from that.
Yes, good. And say a little bit more. There's just a little bit more in the text that he's trying to pull out. Take a look at, read the words. That what actually are the mechanics of a prophetic experience? What is a person doing when he has a prophecy? What is the relationship between the body and the soul during the prophetic experience? If you even take a look in the Hebrew, Ki hamavukash mimenu, einenu ela shetashuv nefesh ha'adam elokit, tipareit mechushav v'tir'e ha'olam havuha elyon. For those of you who follow along in the Hebrew, or take a look at the English. What is that prophetic experience? Go ahead.
His physical state becomes dormant, and his spiritual state is what is front and center.
Yes, and the soul is trying to do what? The soul is in itself, in the prophetic experience, the soul is in some way detaching itself from that dormant physical state and sort of having this out-of-body experience of attaching itself to the angels, to the angelic realm. So therefore, what essentially, the way that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi defines prophecy is heaven on this earth. And that's a very important definition for us to keep in mind, for at least Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, is that prophecy is heaven on this earth. It is an experience of the divine. It is an experience of contact with the spiritual realm while I'm still in some way tethered to my physical body, but also in some way detached from my physical body. And so the reason why that's proof of the world to come, the reason why that's proof of an afterlife, is because, number one, you've proved that the soul, there's something that is independent of the body called the soul, and that soul has some place to go to after the body withers and dies. So because by definition, the prophetic experience is something that is completely non-physical. It's something that the body almost is a distraction for. The body is completely superfluous to the prophetic experience. So the point is, which as you mentioned, the body's dormant. The way that Chazal define a prophetic experience for most Nevi'im, with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu, is that the body, you lose control of all bodily faculties. That's why when Avraham Avinu is described as having a prophetic experience, it says, V'sar deima nafla al Avram, that a slumber overcame Avram. His body basically you separate control over your physical faculties in order for you to be able to detach and reattach yourself to some spiritual dimension.
Isn't that what we feel like at night when we sleep?
So the Gemara does say that sleep is 1/60th of Nevuah. Sleep is 1/60th of prophecy.
Yeah.
So, or a dream, I should say. A dream is 1/60th of prophecy. Sleep is 1/60th of death, and a dream is a mini prophecy. So there is that type of detachment, although it's very, very minimal in comparison to what a prophetic experience is. A prophetic experience is that you go comatose because your body is completely detached from what you're experiencing. Some people have described autism in that way as well, where there's a greater level of detachment from the body and the mind, so that the mind is could be brilliant and completely intact, but there's a problem with the connection, the contacts between the body and the intellect. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why either there's sensory overload or sensory underload, but the problem is that the contact between the two is faulty. And if you can find a way to channel the intellect outside of the physical senses, then you can actually tap into the autistic individual's mind and be able to have that person communicate and interact with the world. Okay. Okay, so that's going to be his springboard for describing the world to come. Okay. So continue, please, and let's see, when you find a set of teachings.
When you find a set of teachings that contains both wisdom and practices which bring the individual to such a lofty state, when these teachings are utilized in the designated place and are applied using the designated method, then this set of teachings will undoubtedly also preserve the soul after the body has passed away.
So here's the logical argument that he's presenting. We have a set of teachings called the Torah, and the Torah provides us as an entree to the prophetic experience. Because for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, it is pietistic action which brings a person to the prophetic experience. You have to be Jewish, right? That's one requirement to be a prophet. Plus, you have to be pious through your deeds. So if those pious deeds, coupled with my Jewish soul, can propel me to a prophetic experience such that I can connect with the spiritual realm while still tethered in some way to my body, then certainly when I'm completely detached from my body, because my body has died, certainly that set of teachings that I've put into practice while I was alive will help propel me to that world to come, to that very same spiritual realm. So the afterlife for Rebbe Yehuda Halevi is the same place that a prophet goes to when he's having his prophetic experience, in a generic sense. Of course, he's not. There are many, many Sfarim who get into a very technical discussion of the different compartments of the heavenly realm. But Rabbi Yehuda Levi is not interested in that now. The very fact that there is a spiritual realm where God resides, where his angels reside, and that's where a prophet goes to when he's having a prophecy, is proof to the fact that there's a place for us all to go to when our body passes away. And the way that we get there, what's the passageway to get there? The very same set of teachings that brings a person to prophecy, which is the Torah, is the very same set of teachings and instructions that will bring a person to get to gain passage to Olam Haba when his body passes away. Now, I should point out that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is consistent with his belief that it is piety which brings a person to prophecy. As we will perhaps explain a little bit further, and we've touched on a little bit in past discussions of prophecy, it seems like the Rambam is not completely in agreement with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. For Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, because prophecy is such a supernatural phenomenon, it cannot be directly correlated to the intellect. It's not like the more intellectually developed I am, the more propensity that I have to experience prophecy. And to wit, for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, you could have a person who may not be that completely developed intellectually, but at the same time is extremely pious, is filled with chesed, and does all of these amazing things with his life, that person can achieve prophecy. For the Rambam, if you look in his discussion of prophecy, he connects it much more to the experience of a developed intellect. And he says that prophecy is the most developed intellect. So therefore, if a person focuses on existential thoughts about the purpose of life and God and all of these other ideas and goes into a deep trance of meditation, eventually the person can achieve the highest level of meditation, which is the prophetic experience. So for the Rambam, I don't think that you'll be able to create the same corollary that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is creating between the prophetic experience and the afterlife. If the afterlife is a place of reward and the prophetic experience is an intellectual achievement, then I don't see how necessarily the two are as connected as Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is creating them. But you see that this is another very important distinction in this continual dichotomous structure that we've created between Rambam and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Yes?
So is the mind and the intellect part of the body or part of the soul?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that it's not so easily answered because the intellect can be broken down into many different components. There are parts of the intellect that I think that the simplest answer is that the intellect is part of the soul, but it is influenced by being attached to the body. So therefore, our active consciousness is a product of both both what our soul yearns for and for what our body yearns for. But it's clearly a non-physical component of our being, the intellect. And so therefore it belongs to our spiritual side. But for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, it's not so easy to define what the totality of the neshama is. It seems to be much more than just our conscious intellect. There's something inside of us that's perhaps we're not even connected to consciously that's also considered to be part of the neshama. So the whole question of how to quantify the soul, especially in terms of intellect, is not something that's so easily done. And there's a lot that's written about it. As a matter of fact, many of the Sfarim create different divisions within the neshama. So there's the intellectual neshama, there's the emotional neshama, and different terms are used for ruach, nefesh, and neshama, and other terminologies that are used. But for now, let's just say that the intellect is part of the neshama, but it's influenced by the body as well.
So does that mean then, when somebody dies and goes to Olam Haba, that their intellect goes with them? Because something could be not part of your body, let's say your sense of humor. Are you going to have your sense of humor in Olam Haba? It's not part of your body, and it went to be born differently.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends what kind of jokes you like to tell.
But when I think about, that we learned that Olam Haba is tzaddikim sitting around with their crowns on their head learning Torah, so how could the intellect not be a part of Olam Haba?
Yeah, so at least a component of your intellect is part of your neshama. But there may be parts of your conscious thinking that are a product of your connection to your body, which means that the things that, when I see a piece of cheesecake in the refrigerator and I want to eat it, that's my active consciousness. How much of that is my neshama intellect and how much of that is my body feeding the intellect and saying that you should eat that piece of cheesecake? So that's why it's not so easily answered as to, the way that I think in life, and certainly my memories will be part of my individuated soul in Shemayim. All of the memories that of my life experience will be part of my neshama. But as far as what I'm actively thinking at every moment of the day is a combination of many different factors. Yes.
So what would the rabbi like Rabbi Yehuda Halevi say about someone that has Alzheimer's and someone has a physical illness that makes their whole psyche disappear?
Well, it disappears from the person that's in front of us, from their active consciousness. But even with people who have Alzheimer's or who are in a vegetative state, there is something that is preserved in the neshama. It may be completely detached from the body, so therefore it's no longer detectable, but it's preserved in the neshama.
It seems like there's a correlation between your physical state and the state of your...
Yes, but when we die, that's the ultimate brain death, right? and yet we believe that there's a preservation of our individual selves and our neshama. So when a person loses their mental faculties in this world, it just means that that part of their neshama is already detached from their body. Okay. Let's go on. Page 126.
The Kuzari said...
Or let's not go on.